And stand by for another edition of the Lunch Special. To another edition of the Lunch Special here on KZSU, and today a real special one, not normally heard in this time slot, a local activist from right here in Palo Alto, a guy who's doing his best to get all of us to help change this world. And I'm talking about an old friend of this show and this of me and this station, Mr. Paul George. Paul, welcome back to KZSU.
Thanks, Bert. Glad to be here.
Yeah, you were going to come on a couple weeks ago and had a little medical problem, and I hope it's working out for you.
Yeah, I was attacked by a feral screen door. Viciously attacked, I might add.
did it all work out?
It's working out, you know, as you can see. The people on radio can't see, but
sure.
My thumb is still all wrapped up. Skin is growing back. Little infection thing. It's amazing what it can do.
Yeah, you put it up on your website on Peninsula Peace and Justice, on peaceandjustice.org, and for at least the wrapped-up thumb, we didn't get to see the underneath, thank goodness. And it was bigger than
I put that on Facebook. I don't
Okay. Well, there's a link to it.
I'm not getting anything in my headphones, by the way,
really?
If that matters. But it would just mean I'd be listening to myself anyway. that's a little better, yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay.
But, Paul, you've normally I have you on in the next hour, our social justice hour, and we talk for an hour. And
yeah, and, you know, I was really excited when you invited me on for the lunch hour, but, Bert, where is the buffet and the sandwiches?
The girls are bringing it. It's on the way. That's after. But, Paul, why don't you just, since you're not normally on this time slot, just briefly introduce yourself, because there's folks that tune in from, I know, outside the Bay Area, and they love to hear the good music that all the professors bring on. And you being an activist, I'm sure you brought some of that kind of music with you today.
Well, I brought a selection of things that turn me on. Some of it's political and some of it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But
a little background on you first, though. You're a local activist. Where do you hail from?
I was originally born in Philadelphia, grew up in New Jersey. That's where I got started in activism, as a matter of fact, in 1969, when I was 16 years old. Went to work for the Gene McCarthy for President campaign. And,
wow.
Or 1968, I mean. And for those who don't remember, Gene McCarthy was running for president against an incumbent Democrat president. McCarthy was a Democratic senator and ran on the simple platform of bring the troops home from Vietnam now, and actually knocked Lyndon Johnson out of the race. And he didn't end up winning, unfortunately. The power structure managed to subvert his grassroots movement, and Hubert Humphrey ended up being the nominee, and Richard Nixon ended up being the electee.
But they had a big fight at the convention over that, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, and a big fight out in the streets at that convention, too, if
that
you might remember.
That was 1968, right.
1968 in Chicago.
Were you there?
No, I wasn't. I was invited to go and you know, do some staffing for the campaign, but a family vacation had been planned, and so I headed off to the Jersey Shore to do a little surfing, and then got some phone calls from my friends who were there, and getting gassed in the streets, getting clubbed in their hotel rooms. I mean, the cops came into the hotels and busted in doors and dragged out activists.
Man.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So, you know, I got plenty of that later in my career, so I don't feel like I missed out on anything too wild in Chicago in 68. But yeah, that's where I got started. It was pretty amazing. I had always been a real news junkie, as they say. Always like to follow foreign affairs, world affairs, and just wasn't satisfied with the answers I was getting about Vietnam, why we were in Vietnam, you know, mm-hmm. when I was 15, 16 years old. And one day on the way home from school, what had been a pet shop on my regular route home had suddenly turned into a Gene McCarthy for President campaign office there in the New Jersey suburbs. Turns out the guy who owned the pet shop, and unfortunately I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, John something, was a longtime labor activist himself, had been a member of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade prior to World War II. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
The ones that went over to Spain to fight
fascism. Yep, a bunch of socialists. This guy had been a longtime labor leader, like I said, organizer, and he saw the need. You know, he realized that what Gene McCarthy was saying was really important. We didn't belong in Vietnam. Like today, we don't belong in Afghanistan or Iraq. And the solution was simple. Just get out. It's an illegal war. Bring the troops home. So he turned over. He shut down his pet shop for a while. And for the next year, it was the Gene McCarthy headquarters. And it was really where my political education got started. Even though I had always been following the news, I was, you know, I rapidly realized I wasn't getting the news.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy, in addition to the other people working on the campaign that I, you know, got to learn about organizing from and stuff, this the pet shop owner John would come in the evenings. He kind of just turned the office over to the kids. We were kids. The oldest one working there was 19.
Wow.
So, but he would come over in the evenings and just tell stories about, you know, organizing struggles, labor struggles, and, you know, the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. And it was a real education.
Paul George is our guest for the hour, the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice here in the Peninsula. You brought some music, Paul. Why don't we cut to that? And what's the first piece you want to play for the folks?
Well, this is from Leon Rosselson, British singer, writer. He writes a lot of children's books, but he's one of the most political singers I've ever come across. He's absolutely fabulous, and this is probably my all-time favorite song by him. It's called The World Turned Upside Down. And well, why don't we listen to it, and then we can talk about the story afterwards if you want. It's a pretty interesting bit of history here.
Sure.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, A ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor folks starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. Still we are free, though we are poor. You diggers all, stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim. Tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
Some anti-war music for your Monday afternoon here on the Lunch Special. I'm Bird, your host. We're here with Director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, Paul George.
That was more anti-capitalism.
There you go.
Yeah, the song, again, by Leon Rosselson, it's called The World Turned Upside Down, goes back to the earliest roots of our modern capitalism in the mid-1600s in England, when what was called the enclosure movement started happening. Most of the farmland had been shared in common by people. And, you know, they didn't own the land. They just farmed it. Subsistence farming would sell some of it. And the king started giving out grants for private property. Mm-hmm. And they started quite literally enclosing the land in walls. And the Diggers was a movement that came up to oppose this. And they took over land, they farmed it, they lived together. And as the lyrics in the song said, this earth was made a common treasury for us all. That's what they believed, and that's the way things had been working until the kings and the elites came along. And it was actually the earliest days of capitalism. And there was tremendous fight back over it, from ordinary folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues right on to this day, 400 years later.
Stanford has a powwow every Mother's Day weekend. It's been going on for 39 years, and the Native Americans come here and they powwow for the weekend and camp out. I'm sure you're aware of it.
Yeah.
I'd never been to the opening ceremony where they all the dancers that are going to dance that weekend from young to old march in behind a color guard, a Native American color guard, all traditional. And as I was watching it, I realized these were the descendants of the people that used to live here.
Right.
And they didn't own this land. They were just part of the landscape, right? And that's the way they saw themselves, too. They lived with, they were nature. And it really choked me up to realize that these people really know what the meaning of, you know, what they're doing here. And it was that same weekend that they had the big controversy about the immigration thing in Arizona.
Right. I was going to react to that by saying it that sort of thing really points up the absurdity of...
Because nobody's legal except them, if you want to boil it down to its finest point, right?
Right. And then there are a lot of reservations, nominally sovereign, but a lot of reservations in Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, quite a bit. And,
right.
Yeah, pretty ironic. But.
Sure is. God, I think we're getting it wrong this time. Anyway, we got some more music, unless we want to definitely play all these beautiful songs you brought. Who's up next, Paul?
This is one of my other passions beyond political music is Celtic music.
Really?
And this is Martin Hayes, and he's probably one of the, if not the greatest Celtic fiddler around. Got to see him in concert in person for the first time a couple of months ago down in Santa Cruz.
And
it was great. He is amazing. So this is Martin Hayes, and the cut is, as is traditional with Celtic music, there's usually two or three songs strung together, and this one's The Crooked Road and The Fox Hunter's Reel.
Thank you. time has come to finish off, and we will with a bunch of tunes. These are 6 tunes, all in a bunch. Play them all at once. Thank you very much for coming along tonight. Nice to see you. Nice to be back. Hope we see you again. Thanks a lot. All the best.
Thank you.
Some Celtic music for your afternoon listening pleasure, ladies and gentlemen.
A lot of energy in that music, isn't there?
Definitely. Paul George, the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice here in Palo Alto. Paul, who was that?
That's a group no longer together called the Bothy Band, B-O-T-H-Y. They're Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And a Bothy is a little shack, basically, out in the farmlands, you know, out where they're doing farming and sheep herding and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to get together in the Bothy and just jam. And that's what this band tries to bring, that spirit of people just jamming on their instruments.
They did. They were in front of a large audience,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they were a really well-known Celtic group back in their heyday. They did eventually break up, and some of them go on to, you know, solo careers. Not a lot of money in Celtic music, but there are a lot of avid fans out there, and I just I really like the music.
How did you get into it? Did you hear it live as a kid, or hear it on the radio, or have records?
No, it was more an acquired taste as an adult, and exploring roots, basically. You know,
hanging out at those coffee houses.
Yeah, and my own roots are Scottish and Welsh, and my original wife was very proud to be Irish. Last name of Doherty, and we just started exploring some of that, and and then went over there and heard a lot of the music live and
stuff.
Oh,
really? You got to go over to Ireland and Scotland?
Yeah.
Wow.
And just heard some fantastic music over there, and plus a couple of wonderful countries, just great people, so...
It's got a big following here in the Bay Area, too. I know in the city there's several bars that feature Celtic music all the time. San Jose has some. I think Sunnyvale on Murphy Avenue has a couple of Irish bars that has it.
Yeah, there's a really good Celtic society of, I forget the full name, of Monterey Bay and South Bay, something like that. And they put on a lot of concerts at various venues. That's where I got to hear Martin Hayes for the first time in person, was down at the Cumbwa in Santa Cruz. Great little venue. And
sure.
Yeah, we got there early enough to have front row seats. So Martin and his mad fiddle were just 6 feet away from us. He's
very cool.
He's an amazing fiddler, Martin Hayes.
And they feature quite a bit of Celtic music over the San Gregorio store, too.
Yeah, you were mentioning.
I had the owner on a couple of weeks ago, and that's one of his favorite musics.
No, the only times I've stopped in there and happened across live music, it's inevitably been country western, which is not quite my thing. But
yeah, he said the live music out there started when he first bought the store in 1980 with these Irish guys coming in and jamming around
just
his
jamming.
Fire. Yeah, they'd come in for the fireplace. Well, he's got a stove, a potbelly stove, and they'd come in the wintertime and play around there. And the music scene just blossomed from that.
Yeah.
And now he's got bands twice on Saturday and twice on Sunday in late morning, 11 to 1, and then 2 to 5, Saturday and Sunday. And if you go on their website, it's definitely a good portion of it is Celtic.
Yeah. It's, that's one of the things I like about Celtic music, about old-time music, is the jamming.
Yeah.
And people just bringing their instruments and... laying down some tunes, and we have some amazing musicians in this area that just
sure do.
Have hundreds of tunes in their head. it's amazing.
We were talking off mic, and you are one of those rabble rousing troublemakers trying to get the world to do the right thing. Yeah, you're welcome. And we were talking about the oil debacle down in the Gulf. And you mentioned that you saw something coming up called the 75th Annual Louisiana Shrimp and Petroleum Festival.
Yeah, pretty incredible, isn't it? It was, there was an article in the New York Times over the weekend about how tied to oil drilling the Louisiana economy is. and that they are just never going to give it up because it's such an essential part of their economy there, as is the fishing. So this festival has apparently been going on for 75 years, and you know they celebrate the two main industries in Louisiana, which is fishing and, you know, ocean sports and things, and the oil drilling. So this coming up over the Labor Day weekend is the 75th annual Shrimp and Petroleum Festival. Their logo is a shrimp kind of hugging an oil rig out in the Gulf. It's under the circumstances, it's pretty bizarre, but they, you know, they interviewed the guy who runs this festival. He expects this to be the biggest one ever. And it's full speed ahead. And if you look at their website, and I don't remember what the website is now, but something like shrimppetrofest.com or something. But the point of the festival, and this is the word, these are the words on the website, to show that oil and water really do mix. And unfortunately, they are mixing too much. You know, as long as we're on the topic, one little pet peeve I have about this whole thing debacle that's going on down in the Gulf of Mexico is everyone referring to it as an oil spill. It's not a spill. You know, spills are for milk when you spill a glass of milk on the table or something, mm-hmm. you know, or you spill a cup of coffee. You know, this is a gusher. This is a deluge, and we're destroying the Gulf of Mexico and all the life that's there and on the shoreline. And it's just one of these things, you know, language is important. Words are important.
Yeah.
And when everybody is referring to it as a spill, it really minimizes it.
It sure does, doesn't it?
You know,
I heard somewhere that if the figures are correct by some of the scientists that saw the video of it, it might be the equivalent to an Exxon Valdez every 4 days. And we know what the Exxon Valdez did to that fishing, that whole fishing scene up in Alaska. Just
right.
The one. And this has been going on for 4 weeks now. So if it's true that it's an Exxon Valdez every 4 days, that would literally decimate probably the entire Gulf Coast
for a long time. I don't think we have a clear handle yet on just how bad this is going to be. But, you know, Exxon Valdez was one ship loaded with raw petroleum, crude petroleum. And when it ran aground, you know, it only had so much it could spill because it only held so much.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff is coming straight out of, you know, underground. You know, the wellhead is a mile down in the ocean, but the oil is another 4,000 feet down below that. It's almost 2 miles down.
Wow.
And, you know, they were drilling there because it's a huge well and a huge source. And now it's just, you know, pouring out, in a deluge, not a spill.
Yeah.
And there still seems to be no end in sight. And, you know, I'm no expert on these things. I don't know why they haven't been able to cap it off yet. I know it's a difficult position to be working a mile down.
Sure.
But what this really should be telling us is to look back. We've heard a lot about the MMS, the Mineral and Mine Service, and how close they've gotten to the petroleum industry.
And government agency charged with overseeing all that?
Yeah. And you know, they have a conflict of interest because part of that agency exists to maximize royalties from oil pumping,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, goes back into the general treasury. We might say, well, that's a good thing. You know, everybody's making money off of, you know, getting our piece of the action. But they can't be encouraging and trying to maximize the royalties while at the same time strictly enforcing environmental concerns. And so, you know, this Deepwater Horizon that is gushing oil into the Gulf of Mexico, you know, got a pass, got an exemption on environmental impact statements and filings that they had to make, as did apparently a lot of other oil rigs.
Hmm.
And incredibly, even given all that, the amount of time the story, you know, has been on the front pages and on the TV news, recent polling still shows that a majority of Americans do favor offshore oil drilling.
Isn't that incredible?
It's incredible. And, you know, it just points up the fact that we need some really drastic changes, not only in our laws and regulations, but in how we think about things. And, you know, all you have to do is drive down the street and see how many SUVs are around, and you know why we have the majority of people in favor of offshore oil drilling.
Yeah.
Even with this disaster still happening right in front of our eyes.
Tyson Slocum, a big activist in that area, mentioned that most of that oil pumped out correctly doesn't even end up going to the United States. It gets sold on the open market. So that even though it's United States oil when they pump it out of the ground, technically, it doesn't benefit the United States oil world
right,
at all.
Right, not necessarily. Not, yeah.
Right. It goes on the open market for sale, and the money goes back to, well, British Petroleum is not an American company, I think, is it?
No, officially it's still British, although they've bought up a good number of U.S. Companies like Amoco. Yeah.
Okay.
And different ones like that. So
crazy stuff. And you got some stuff coming up, too. But why don't we play another song for the folks, and then we'll mention some of your, because you guys have events going on. Peninsula Peace and Justice have events going on every week and sometimes twice a day. But you got something queued up for the folks we can play for them?
Well, I don't, but I can do it real quick.
I'll talk.
It's a little hard getting these jewel cases open without the use of one of my thumbs here.
I hear you. Man, that's got to be rough.
So we're going to do a little change in direction here. One of my other favorite genres is blues. And this is one of the all-time masters, Leadbelly, Hughie Leadbetter, and one of my favorite songs. Since I spent a lot of time going to school and living in Washington, D.C., this song has always been one of my favorites because it tells the story of when Leadbelly visited Washington, D.C. with his band, a lot of members of which were white, and they could all get into the hotel, but Hughie Leadbetter could not get in because of the racism of the era.
So was that a privately owned hotel?
Yeah.
Because maybe Rand.
I see you're going to segue right into the Rand Paul.
Maybe Rand Paul would be in favor of that.
Yeah. Well, he would be. So
or so he said.
So maybe I should introduce this as here's the world that Rand Paul would like to see back. But this is called the Bourgeois Blues.
Down. I got the bourgeois blues, gonna spread the news all around. Me and Martin, we was standing upstairs. I heard a white man say, I don't want no niggas up there. Lord, he's a bourgeois man. He's a bourgeois town. Be mistreated by no bourgeoisie, Lord, in a bourgeois town. It's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues are gonna spread the news all around. Thank you. poor colored people are torn us down, Lord, in a bush war town. It's a bush war town. I got the bush war blues, I'm gonna. The white folks in Washington, they know how. Took a colored man a nigger just to see him bow, Lord, it's a bush war town. It's a bush war town. I got the bush war blues, I'm gonna bet in years all around. Tell all the colored folks to listen to me. Don't try to find no home in Washington, D.C., cause there's a bush war town. It's a bush war town. I got the bush war blues and I'm so gonna bear the news.
Lead Belly.
Yeah, isn't he great?
Man, he was amazing. His playing was so powerful. He was in jail in Louisiana for murder, got life, and the governor heard him play and pardoned him.
Right.
Let him out.
Yep. And once he got out of jail and resumed his recording career, and this is one of my all-time favorite Lead Belly stories, actually. He had been taken advantage of by the record producers and record publishers so many times that he thought, I'm not getting hung up in that system anymore. I'm going to perform and such. And one of his most famous songs, Goodnight Irene, he had just penned. As I recall, this is not long after he got out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so deciding not to get all caught up in the business side and getting taken advantage of, he first went to one record publisher and said, I got the song, like to sell you the rights to it. And they listened, you know, and said, yeah, that's great. We want to lay it down. Here's a contract. And he says, oh, no contracts. You just give me a couple $100. And they're thinking, we got advantage of this guy. You know, he doesn't want to sign a contract or anything. So they gave him a couple $100 cash. He goes to the next record producer and does the same thing. I got this song, Goodnight Irene. I want to sell it to you. Oh, no contract. I don't want to sign no contract. Just give me a couple $100 cash. You know, by the time he was done, about 12 record producers thought they had the rights to this
very
song.
Very cool.
He had a pocket full of cash,
yeah.
And no one had actually bought the rights to his song.
Very smart guy. Well, that's what Wall Street does. They sell 500% of a company, right?
Yeah, right.
They must have learned it from him. Paul George, director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, this week, as a matter of fact, tomorrow night, May 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Fireside Room in the Unitarian Universalist Church at 505 East Charleston Road in Palo Alto, you're featuring Tad Daly, and the talk is going to be entitled Apocalypse Never. And why don't you speak a little bit about this?
Well, it's actually the title of a new book, taken from the title of a new book written by Tad Daly called Apocalypse Never, Forging the Path to a Nuclear Weapon-Free World. We all know that getting rid of nukes is going to be difficult, if not impossible, but there's some renewed energy, including from out of the White House, not the Pentagon necessarily. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're doing this now, and we'll talk about another program next week that's going to focus on nuclear weapons, is all month long at the United Nations, all the countries in the world are going through the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty Review Conference. And the original nonproliferation treaty signed back in the 60s was intended to be reviewed, expanded, tightened up every 5 years or so. So there's this major conference, and the whole world is kind of looking at nuclear weapons and what they mean in the 21st century, and whether there's going to be progress, real progress or not, we don't know. But that's going on all month at the United Nations. So we've put together a couple programs to focus on the question of nuclear weapons. So as you mentioned, tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Unitarian Church, Tad Daly, who's written this new book, he's a pretty interesting guy. He works with Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, which is a long time, one of the leading anti-nuclear organizations global. And he's also a former policy advisor and speechwriter for Dennis Kucinich. So he's got a long history in Capitol Hill politics and in international relations, and so we're really glad to have this opportunity. He's also going to be speaking a couple days later here on campus. And I don't have that with me. I thought I brought that with me.
Is it on the website? Is there a link to it on the website?
Yes, there is. It's on our calendar. If you go to peaceandjustice.org, click on the calendar tab, and not just for these events, but events sponsored by all kinds of groups in the peninsula and South Bay, you can check out the calendar and see what's coming up. It's a great way to get involved. So also, that's Tad Daly. And then a week later on
Your TV show,
Tuesday
your
night, our monthly TV program, Other Voices, broadcast locally on cable channel 27 and streaming live on the internet. We're going to have Jackie Cabasso, who's the executive director of Western States Legal Foundation. And Jackie is at the United Nations now as an official participant. One of the things that happens at these UN conferences is it's not just the official representatives of states, of countries. The United Nations recognizes a lot of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, which bring a lot of expertise and kind of a grassroots perspective and adds a lot to the discussion. So Jackie is an official participant in this UN conference on nuclear weapons, and she's been there all month back in New York. And in addition to being inside at the conference table, she's also organizing demonstrations outside in the streets. So she's going to come with a really interesting perspective. And so that's Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, June 1st at 7 p.m. at the Community Media Center, 900 San Antonio Road in Palo Alto. And that's also at our website, peaceandjustice.org.
Paul George.
I see breakfast has arrived.
Yes.
Lunch, the lunch special. I came in asking him, where's the buffet?
And I said the lady was bringing it. And she brought it.
She brought it. It's still warm, I can tell.
Paul George, the director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, our guest. And Paul, you got some more music for the people. You brought some great stuff. And who do we got up next for the folks?
Well, this is an interesting album. It's by Charlie Mingus and the Mingus Big Band, and it's called Blues and Politics. And this particular cut is called Don't Let It Happen Here. And why don't we just listen to that?
One day they came and took the communist, and I said nothing because I was not a communist. Then one day they burned the Catholic churches, and I said nothing because I was born a Protestant. One day they came and took the unionists, and I said nothing because I was not a unionist. One day they came and took the people of the Jewish faith, and I said nothing because I had no faith left. Then one day they came and took me, and I could say nothing because I was as guilty as they were for not speaking out and saying that we all have a right to freedom. Thank you. Guilty as they were for not speaking out and saying that we all have a right to freedom. So don't let it happen here.
Charles Mingus right there for your listening pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. We're here with Peninsula Peace and Justice Director Paul George getting over a small infirmity in his thumb. It's on your Facebook page. How can people see that? You got an amazing photo here, Paul. How can people get to that Facebook page?
Well, they...
You did put it on the internet, so...
Yeah.
For people to see.
I don't know. I don't know how it works if you're not a Facebook friend. Go to Facebook and search for Paul George, and it's probably public. Everything on Facebook now seems to be public anymore, no matter...
Not just Facebook, everything everywhere. If you Google your name, your address comes up. The internet's crazy. Just Google Paul George, and it'll come up on Facebook.
Yeah, it's lovely.
That's it.
Yeah, it'll make your day.
Our next guest hasn't arrived yet, and I love having you on here, Paul. And it's been a while. We got to do this more often. So why don't we see if we can hold you over? And first of all, let's do this
for a little while.
Yeah, for a little while, because I know you're a busy cat. You got a lot of stuff going. You got to prepare for that talk tomorrow. And then what else is coming up? Now, you send out this wonderful email letter, and. They're in conjunction with Peninsula Peace and Justice, San Jose Peace and Justice is doing a thing on lynching, and that's going to be tomorrow as well. And they're going to have the uncle of Oscar Grant on.
Yeah, yeah, that looks like a really good program. What you're looking at there is the email calendar that we send out once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And just like our website calendar, we list everybody's events, not just ours. So we're happy to help groups get publicity, whatever they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Then
as long as it's related.
It also looks like you have a free Friday night film special coming up.
Yeah, not us. Again, this is another group sponsoring this called Transition Palo Alto. It's a lot of the local environmental groups, and they're doing a film series on food and the environment and how factory food processing is impacting the environment these days. And they've been doing a series, I think about six films every Friday night, and that's free. So I would encourage people, if you want to get this in your email every Friday, it's a great listing of events that everybody's doing. So just go to our website again, peaceandjustice.org, and sign up for the email list. It's a little box right there. We won't overwhelm you. Like I said, we send out the weekly calendar and occasional action alerts if you need to be calling Congress or boycotting Arizona or something
calling,
like that.
Calling Rand Paul.
Calling Rand Paul, yes.
About what hotel he's going to stay in next week. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a little break. We're going to come back and finish up this music you've brought and get a little more on the social justice side. Now, just keep this stuff going. And this is KZSU Stanford. We're here with Paul George, Peninsula Peace and Justice. And listen to this.
We'd like to thank our guest today for having been on our show and to you for tuning in to this week's edition of the KZSU Lunch Special. To download a free MP3 or podcast of this show and some previous ones, please visit our website, which is kzsu.stanford.edu/tildelunch. Our email address is lunch@kzsu.stanford.edu. Please tune in next Monday at noon for more music and talk with another fascinating guest from the Stanford community on the Lunch Special show on KZSU Stanford 90.1 FM.
Most jazz musicians, being essentially freelancers, have no medical benefits. They don't get sick pay. They don't have retirement pensions. But luckily, when illness strikes, jazz musicians can turn to the Jazz Foundation of America. Since 1989, the JFA has helped hundreds of aging and ill musicians with medical expenses, rent supplements, and other assistance. It was founded by musicians for musicians and supports itself through jam sessions and donations from the jazz-loving community. If you would like to help support the Jazz Foundation of America, please call them at 1-800-532-5267. That's 1-800-JFA-JAMS. Or visit them on the web at www.jazzfoundation.org.
The Stanford Center for Internet and Society of the Stanford Law.
It's 1 o'clock and you're in tune to KZSU Stanford. Do want to let you know the views or opinions expressed by the host DJ or their guests present on KZSU 90.1 FM Stanford do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Leland Stanford Junior University or its associates. We thank you for tuning into this KZSU 90.1 FM radio broadcast and stand by for more Paul George, Peninsula Peace and Justice, and some great music.
sight with another man's eyes. Make submarines submerge for weeks. It don't make sense when you can't make. Take another man's heart and make another man live. You can go to the moon and come back through. You can crush countries in a matter of weeks. But it don't make sense when you can't make.
Welcome to another edition of Shedding Lights, kind of holding over from the lunch special, and Paul George still with us, director of Peninsula Peace and Justice, and that's a now a local blues man, Mr. Kenny Neal, doing a Willie Dixon classic number, It Don't Make Sense If You Can't Make Peace. And Kenny's done some work for you, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's done a couple of concerts for us, one at an anti-war rally, and most recently back in February, a very successful benefit concert to raise earthquake relief money for Haitian grassroots groups. And that was, like I said, really successful. We raised $4,000. Every dime went to grassroots groups in Haiti. No administrative overhead here or anything. Mm-hmm. And Kenny and a number of his friends, fabulous musicians, all donated their time. And, oh, boy, they laid down a great set. And, you know, it's nice to... In the work that I do, to be able to dance once in a while.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you set up a little dance floor out there.
Right, as Emma Goldman said, I don't want to be part of your revolution if I can't dance. So, you know.
Good idea. Paul, now the true social justice side of your career, you wanted to talk about some other topics you're
I just wanted to be sure to try to slip in here. you know, the United States is about to start the next major offensive in Afghanistan. We all heard about Marja several months ago. That has not proved to be successful. They haven't driven the Taliban out of that region. The government that they installed is hated and despised by the people that live in the area. And now they're turning their attention to Kandahar, which is a major urban area in southern Afghanistan. And this is the real escalation of the war. At the same time, and we don't know exactly when that's going to launch, we do know that the Taliban have launched in the past week three major attacks on U.S. bases. This is going to be a big thing coming up, a big Biden deal, as Joe Biden says.
This is connected with that 30,000 troops that Barack Obama said he wanted to send over, right?
Right. And the price tag for those 30,000 troops, some $33 billion, is going to get voted on by the Senate this week, probably. So I just want to encourage your listeners to pick up the phone, call Dianne Feinstein, call Barbara Boxer, and tell them to vote no. And what they're going to do when they send this down to Capitol Hill, Senate's going to vote on it, and then Congress will be voting on it, or the House will be voting on it, maybe as early as next week. They're going to load it up with all kinds of other programs, some stuff that's really needed, that people would want to vote for, and they're going to try to skip around approving $33 billion for this illegal, immoral war and occupation of a sovereign country, by loading this bill up with a lot of things that people do want our representatives to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure yet what it's going to be loaded up with exactly, but it's pretty clear that it's not going to be a straight up or down vote on the Afghanistan war. So call Congress, especially the senators Feinstein and Boxer this week. Tell them to vote no, and tell them you want a straight up or down vote on the Afghanistan war funding.
$33 billion,
and that's just for the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
$33 billion. We've already spent over $1 trillion on Iraq and Afghanistan. We've now been in Afghanistan. We're coming up on 9 years this fall, 7 years in Iraq. It is time, well past time, to stop pursuing this failed policy and bring our troops home. And this isn't even talking about the secret war that's going on in Pakistan, where, you know, these predator drones, these unmanned things flying around and blasting rockets down on villages in Pakistan and wiping out civilians along with alleged Al-Qaeda and Taliban. Remote control war just shouldn't be a policy of this country, and we really have to speak up on it. I'm afraid Afghanistan and Iraq have both been pushed to the back pages. People aren't paying attention anymore. But I'll tell you, the people in Afghanistan, where civilian casualties, civilian deaths are surging this year, they're bigger than they've ever been throughout the 8.5 years of this war. Despite apparent sincere efforts, to stop the aerial bombing that was causing so many civilian casualties, just the reality of war on the ground, especially when they go into an urban area like Kandahar, the civilians are going to be the ones that are suffering the brunt of it. So call the Senate this week, the House next week, and tell them to vote no on $33 billion for Afghanistan and bring our troops home.
They can get those phone numbers on your website at peaceandjustice.org, right?
Absolutely. Or, unfortunately, I'm drawing a blank on the congressional switchboard number right now.
No, but it's on your website.
Yeah, it is, sure.
So they go to peaceandjustice.org
and follow through. Pick up that phone and call.
Yeah, and funny, too, because if you took the average American and asked them, how would you feel if your country was occupied and your neighbors and your family was getting bombed every day and getting killed, what would you do about it?
They'd probably fight back.
Yeah, they probably would.
Just like the Afghans are, The collective term Taliban, it's a movement. It's legitimate to talk about the Taliban insurgents, but every once in a while we should swap out the words and say what it is. It's Afghanistan citizens insurgency.
Yeah.
I mean, they are Afghans. They're the ones who live there, not us.
Definitely.
So pick up and call. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it is important.
Well, Paul, you're busy and you got to get out of here, but we are going to go out with one last song. And what's it going to be today?
Well, going to go out the way we came in with Leon Rosselson, and this is a rather sarcastic song called No One Is Responsible, and kind of talks about how government works. You just keep passing the blame, kind of like with the oil gusher in the Gulf of Mexico right now.
Mm-hmm.
BP blames the company that owns the rig that they're in from. They blame Halliburton. Halliburton blames BP, and you know, no one is responsible. Here's how it works.
I'm an emergency planner in my calm, efficient manner. I examine ways of dealing with attack, warning red in every district in the land. Preparations are in hand for servicing survivors and disposing of the dead. We have stocks of food and water in our top secret headquarters and supplies of CS gas so refugees can be restrained and we may be forced to shoot a hostile element or looter. But in war, it's most important law and order is maintained. There are safety regulations every householder should learn, and I hope they won't be needed, but that isn't my concern. I've a job that must be done, and I'm the man who's qualified, but I'm not the final arbiter, that cannot be denied, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I don't decide, I don't decide, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I'm just following the guidelines politicians have supplied. I'm a government minister. My aim through thick and thin is to defend our way of life, and every man must do his share. Be it night or be it morning, when I hear the silence warning, to my concrete super bunker I will fearlessly repair. First off, harm the population with a broadcast to the nation. Then with grim determination, grit and energy and drive, I'll mastermind the operation to preserve civilization. For despite the devastation, many millions will survive. Then we will emerge triumphant to tend our shattered flock. Our first task must be regeneration of the nation's stock. I'll be there to offer leadership and play my part with pride, but I'm not the final arbiter, that cannot be denied, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I don't decide, I don't decide, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I just act on the advice that the military provide. I'm a military advisor, I devise and analyse a range of plausible scenarios for any future war. When the doors are locked behind us, you will regularly find us playing realistic war games while computers keep the score. They take one aggressive step and we use theater nuclear weapons on their military targets. Then they counter with the same. So with power balanced nicely, we must calculate precisely if a further escalation would knock Europe out the game. For if our nuclear deterrent should fail to deter, it's imperative we're ready for the worst that might occur. So I offer expert counsel others well may override, but I'm not the final arbiter, that cannot be denied, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I don't decide, I don't decide, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I just integrate the weapon systems scientists provide. I'm a scientific wizard, my laboratory is a dip into a world where nothing is beyond the human mind. Here we spend our time designing and improving and refining sophisticated weapons of a cost-effective kind. Now we're following our foreheads on the new nuclear warheads with miniaturized components and increased destructive power, and the race is razor keen to make the doomsday machine. That will be our crowning glory, that will be our finest hour. I sometimes question what I'm doing, and I wonder if I should, but I know that if I didn't, there'd be many more who would. And in scientific progress, we must match the other side, and I'm not the final arbiter, that cannot be denied, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I don't decide, I don't decide, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. Our serving men need better weaponry, all I do is provide. I'm a missile commander, I repudiate the slander that to do the job I'm doing you've got to be insane. I've been screened and classed as stable. How How else would I be able to carry out my duties without cracking under the strain? There are just two guys who lie low in each Titan missile silo, on permanent alert in case the order comes to fire. And if my partner starts to be a danger, acting kinda weird, then I guess I'd have to shoot him, cause that's what the rules require. It's a scary situation, but I reckon I don't scare, for I read the Bible daily and I offer up a prayer. And if crisis time approaches, I will take it in my stride, and I'm not the final arbiter, that cannot be denied, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I don't decide, I don't decide, and I can't be held responsible for what I don't decide. I'm just fingering the buttons that governments provide. I'm a superpower leader, my crusade is peace and freedom, and to further these great causes I will go to any length. I will see that no expense is spared to double our defences. Our security demands that we negotiate from strength. We must take a stance that's tough in case they think that we're just bluffing, and there's nothing can deflect us from the path that we pursue. We must show them they can't win, cos even balanced on the brink, they needn't think that I will shrink from doing what I have to do. I've drawn the line against aggression to keep tyranny at bay, though exactly where the line is I am not prepared to say. They will know that when they cross it, then God will be my guide, for I'm not the final arbiter, that cannot be denied, and I can't be held responsible for what I won't decide. I won't decide, I won't decide, and I can't be held responsible for what I won't decide. I'll be responding to the data that computers have supplied. We are decent, we are dedicated, worthy and sincere. And when Judgment Day approaches and the trumpet sound we hear, we will rise to meet our Maker, we will have no cause to fear, for we only do our duty, so our consciences are clear. And if the end of all creation is global suicide, there'll be no one who's responsible, for no one will decide.